Welcome to the Fruity Podcast. From the sugary to the savory, we all have odd and unique stories relating to the food we eat. Explore with me the intimate depths of these relationships. I'm your host, Taylor DeBoer. Welcome to the first official episode of the Fruity Podcast. If you have been subscribed to my podcast for a while or following me on social media for a while, you have probably listened to one of my podcast episodes under the TD Nutrition Podcast episode name. And I haven't posted a podcast episode since last November, so almost a year ago. And I thought it was kind of a good time to rebrand my podcast a little bit. I didn't love my name, and I kind of had some ideas on the direction that I wanted to take my podcast, and I obviously found a really cute name that incorporated fruit in it. So what better reflection of me than calling it the Fruity Podcast? So this is my first official episode doing the Fruity Podcast. My plan is to do lots of fun topics, a mix of solo episodes of just me talking and bringing on a lot more guests to have great interviews and great conversations. Like I said, if you've been listening to my podcast before, then you know a lot of it was just me talking about various nutritional topics. But this is going to be a little different, and I'm really excited to start this and have you all here to watch the beginning of this journey. So today's episode topic is I'm not vegan, which may be shocking. And obviously, I'm going to explain that. And this episode is going to be very different as well, because while it's going to be kind of fact-based, it's also going to have a very big spiritual element to it, which is different for me. I feel like there's been some spiritual elements sprinkled throughout previous episodes, but this is going to be a little bit more spiritually heavy. So, I'm not vegan, and if you follow my page, you may or may not know this, but technically I am vegan. So, you know, spoiler, obviously I use something very catchy for the title, but technically I am vegan. But if you follow me, you probably have never really seen me identify as being vegan. I maybe have used the term raw vegan once, maybe twice, but I usually even try to avoid that. I use the term high raw much more than I use even raw vegan, and I usually just leave it at high raw. I will call myself fruit-based, I'll call myself fruitarian, but you really won't hear me use the word vegan. And there's a few reasons for that. You know, I feel like there is a very toxic mentality around veganism or the term being vegan. I think it's rooted in very good things. Like, I have no problem with that. But I think that it has become very toxic, and now there's this whole push for like everyone to eat like Beyond Meat burgers and Impossible burgers, and people should just eat insects because cows are bad and the environment and all this stuff. And as I've dug deeper into a lot of things regarding, I mean, specifically the environment, you know, I have really found that this whole notion that the cows are a problem is just not true. I've spoke before on my page how I have family members who are in the dairy business, and, you know, I hear their perspective on a lot of things, and I'm very much against the mainstream media. I don't talk often about that, but I am, and when you start to see that it's like the mainstream media that talks about how cows and all of that is bad for the environment, there's something up there, because that's not the full picture. And so there's that. So that's one reason why I have an issue with it, because it does really seem to demonize agriculture, not so much agriculture, but at least like cows in a way that I don't agree with. And I also think sometimes this vegan mentality can make it seem like they're so much better than everyone else because, well, I'm not eating dead animals. But I think it's very naive of people who are vegan to think that what you're eating has had no cost as far as animals have not died at all in the foods that you're eating. And I will say, you know, when you're looking at like fruit trees, for example, like, right, you grow a fruit tree and they produce every year and they pretty much stay put. Like, you have orchards and stuff. So it's not like you're having to basically turn over the soil in a field to get ready for another crop when it comes to fruit trees. But other crops that you have to plant, and when they're done, you have to like till the soil and get it ready for another crop to be planted. A lot of times when that happens, animals and stuff do get killed in the process. And so this thought of like, by being vegan, you're not killing animals at all, that's not entirely true. People may come for me on that, but I've also looked into it, and it's like, yes, pretty much if you are a human being and you are eating and feeding yourself, somewhere along the line, probably something in nature had to die to get that to you. So, you know, I think that it's very, you know, unfair for vegans to be like, well, you know, we're not harming any animals at all. Maybe not intentionally. And I can see, okay, where there's that good part coming from. You're not intentionally harming animals. But, you know, a lot of times when it comes to the growing of plants and different crops and stuff, animals are being killed in the process. And again, maybe not intentionally, but it happens. So that's a couple of the reasons why I don't technically identify as vegan. And again, the biggest one is the environmental one, because I do see that there's this push to get people to just not eat meat at all and be in a society where nobody's eating meat. And I do not agree with that. I think that when it comes to nutrition and the way that we nourish our bodies, each person gets to decide for themselves what works best for them, because we all are all bio individuals and we are all a little different, and what works for someone will maybe not work for someone else. And even when working with clients and they say they do want to be fruit-based, not all my clients are, but say that they do, what that's going to look like for one client compared to what that looks like for me and what that looks like for someone else is still going to be very different, even though, yeah, generally speaking, you're eating the same way. But the way that that works best in each person's lifestyle is going to be different. So, you know, what works for someone is going to be different for someone else, even if it's the same basic concept of nutrition. And that's why even sometimes people will always ask, like, well, just tell me what you do, because I'll just do it, or just write me a plan and I'll do it. And I'm like, that might work for a minute, but like, again, you're different than me. So like, there might be some like fine tuning things that are going to look different, and different things that we have to address in your exact health situation. So I kind of say all this to say that while no, I don't eat meat, and I don't believe you have to eat meat to be healthy, I'm also not against eating meat. And I think that you can eat meat and be healthy as well. And that might seem really controversial, because it's like, sometimes I feel like I have to pick a side, and I'm like, but I don't really stand on one side or the other. Like, obviously I'm not really on the meat eating side, because I myself don't eat meat. I don't want to eat meat. I don't see that changing. So I'm certainly then not on the meat eating side. And then as far as being on the vegan side, it's like, well, okay, I'm on the vegan side because I eat that way, but I don't really feel like I identify with the vegan side either, because I have leather handbags, I have leather shoes, I have leather clothes, leather pants, leather jackets. I love my leather pants. I think they look so cute on me. So because of that, I always feel like, well, yeah, I guess I'm not then vegan, and I can't really identify as vegan because I basically just don't eat meat on a nutritional standpoint. But lifestyle wise, I don't, you know, I certainly am not, given that I own those things. So yeah, I always had a really tough time picking a side, because I never felt like I really identified with one side or the other. But I don't, you know, I don't mind meat eaters. Like, it doesn't bother me. So I really kind of wanted to do an episode reflecting on why I think this, and different things that I have reflected on that have landed me in this position, or this stance, I should say. And really the first thing that I started reflecting on when it came to vegan versus meat eating was a very spiritual one. I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school from kindergarten through high school. And when I went to college, I went to a Jesuit university, so a Catholic university. So I pretty much was in Catholic education my entire educational career outside of my master's and stuff. And so I do, I believe in God, and you know, a lot of the Catholic teachings shaped my belief in God and my spirituality for sure. But I think whether or not you believe in God, whether you believe in the universe or some other higher power, nutrition is very spiritual. And I don't believe that humans would be designed to where they have to eat meat slash dead animals to be healthy. I don't think that our creator would have made it to where you have to eat animals, you have to eat dead flesh to be healthy, and if you don't, there's no way you can be healthy. I don't believe that. I don't believe that there's only one way to eat and thrive. So, you know, some people then also argue, well, yeah, right, you wouldn't have a creator then that would want you to eat dead animals then. So therefore, there's the argument that then, yeah, you should be vegan because you don't want to kill anything. But I also think that God did put animals here if we needed to eat them, and that we can eat them, and that's okay. But I don't think that, again, I don't think that you have to eat animals to be healthy, and I don't think that you have to not eat animals to be healthy. I do think that there is two ways to be, and I think it's okay. And I obviously do believe that there are better ways, of course, than eating dead animals, but I think it's okay. Like, to say that is wrong, I don't know, because I do believe humans are superior to animals. I believe as humans that, yes, we should treat animals well. And I have a real issue with like factory farming and a lot of the ways that certain animals like chickens and cows are kept when it's these massive operations. I think that there's real problems there. And that's also why, and I'm going to talk about this at some point too, is why I think going back to smaller scale farming is really where things need to be. And I think that's better for the livelihood of the animals and better for the health of people who do decide to eat meat. And it's funny because I hear all the time, meat eaters will always say that vegans could never be healthy, that they're, you know, that they'll never really be healthy. I have heard Dr. Joseph Mercola, who I love, I think he does amazing work. I've heard him talk about many times how he thinks being vegan is a huge mistake for your health. And obviously I disagree with that, but you hear that all the time. And again, going back to what I just said, I don't believe that you have to eat dead animals to be healthy. I just don't think that our creator would have made it that way. I really don't believe that. I think for people who are like, yeah, I don't want to consume dead flesh and I just want to eat plants, I think absolutely you can be healthy. And I feel like it would be a huge design flaw in the human species if you had to eat dead animals to thrive and be healthy and live a long, beautiful life. Again, the common sense aspect of that does not quite add up for me. And so, that's kind of my thoughts as far as the very religious aspect of it. And then there's this notion that I've thought about as well, is for humans to exist today, I believe that the consumption of meat was in fact needed in order for humans to be where we are today. And so humans, we originated in tropical rainforests, you know, thousands of years ago, eating fruit. You know, humans were originally frugivores, eating primarily fruit. And then, you know, at some point, humans began migrating around the world and inhabiting new areas for whatever reason that may be. Obviously, there's different theories. My personal theory that I think makes the most sense is that human beings are curious and we like to explore. And so I would think that at some point humans were like, well, let's see what's beyond these rainforests and see what else is out there. And the other thing is that humans can only live in cold climates due to tools we make to help our bodies tolerate heat. And so, you know, this is why humans originated in warmer tropical climates, because we do better there. We live better there. We're not cut out to live in cold climates. And so as humans left and inhabited other areas of the globe, those that settled in colder areas, they needed to develop tools to allow them to survive, like warm clothes, you know, fire, things to keep ourselves warm, because we really are not designed to live in cold climates. We thrive in mild tropical climates. I mean, just look at people who live in sunnier areas and warmer areas. You know, I live in California. It is pretty mild here. We don't, you know, we get a lot of sunshine. It doesn't get super cold. It doesn't snow. And, you know, I don't, there's not a whole lot of seasonal depression here versus if you go to places like Oregon and you know, Illinois, where it's very cold and snowy and Oregon rainy, there's a lot more seasonal depression. And it's because our bodies crave the sun. Our bodies crave warmer weather. We are like plants in many ways. We need the sun. The sun is a life force. The sun is not something to be afraid of. As much as we are constantly hounded to be afraid of the sun, we do not need to be afraid of the sun. And so I think, again, and this is just me making an observation. I'm not citing a study, but I think it's pretty safe to say that if you look at people who live in more tropical, warmer climates, they're overall less sick and much happier. And I think that just speaks to our, you know, our human nature, that that's what our bodies do in fact crave. And even just like, you can do a little experiment for yourself. Go stand outside in the sun for a minute and face the sun and close your eyes and just soak up the sun's rays. You will feel like a battery charging and you will feel your mood instantly get better. I know when I sit outside in the sun and I try to get sunshine every day, especially during the warmer months, I try to be out there for at least an hour. And I feel so much better. And when the weather starts to get cold and it's too cold to be outside and I can't expose all of my skin the way I can in the summer, like I feel it in my mental health. Like it's, you know, it's certainly not as bad as those that live in much colder climates. I will say I am very lucky, but I can feel the difference. And I thrive in the summer. Like I am a summer girl through and through. And I think all of us are summer people through and through if we really like stop to think about it. But it's because the sun is so powerful. And so I say all that to say that humans, you know, we originated in tropical areas of the globe before we kind of started branching out. And something to kind of drive this point home a little bit more is that people die of being cold in the winter months more than they die of heat in the summer. There have been politicians that have been trying to say that, you know, heat kills more people than whatever, whatever. And if you look at the actual studies or the statistics, that is not true. So I pulled a couple just because I think it's worth pointing out so that we understand as humans, we are more susceptible to being harmed by the cold than we are by the heat. So according to the CDC, about twice as many people die of excessive cold conditions in a given year than of excessive heat. According to a 2014 study by the CDC, approximately 1,300 deaths per year from 2006 to 2010 were coded as resulting from extreme cold exposure, and 670 deaths per year from extreme heat. There was also an article in Forbes that cited a study from The Lancet, and to show just how greatly the disparity was between cold and heat-related deaths, it looked specifically at England and Wales, and there was on average nearly 800 excess deaths associated with heat and 60,500 excess deaths associated with cold. And this was measured between the years of 2000 and 2019. So that's a huge disparity of dying from excess cold to dying from excess heat. So 60,000 people died from being too cold compared to the 800,000 from being too hot. So I say all that just to show that humans truly thrive in sunny, warm climates. We are much more susceptible to dying from being too cold than we are from being too hot. Obviously, it happens, but we should be much more afraid if there was an ice age one day compared to, you know, things being too hot. We can manage the heat much better for the most part. And then, you know, if you think about colder climates, not a lot of fruit grows there, right? So as humans, we have to figure out other ways to feed ourselves when we don't have access to all this fruit because we're in colder areas that support a lot less plant life. And like I said, I don't think humanity would have, or civilization would be where it is if we couldn't have had meat. And this point dawned on me when I was watching the TV show 1883. I'm going to explain why this dawned on me. I don't know why I had this light bulb moment watching it. I really don't know. But I remember watching it and I was thinking to myself, I couldn't have lived in that time period. There's just no way. Like in order to survive, you would have had to eat meat. And obviously, if I existed in that time period, I wouldn't have known any different, right? Like, people didn't know any different. You just ate meat. That was a part of life. And for those of you who don't know the TV show 1883, it is one of the prequel shows to Yellowstone. And so 1883 is basically about the Oregon Trail and, like, going from Texas to Oregon and, like, the journey of that and how insanely tough it was. So I'm watching this and I'm thinking, like, there is no fruit. Like, nobody's eating fruit. Everyone's eating meat, pretty much. There's, like, one scene where one of the characters is, like, cutting prickly pears. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess prickly pears would be in that part of the country. But, yeah, like, going through that part of the United States, it is not an area that tends to grow a lot of fruit. It is not the tropics. That is for sure. So, you know, in order for these people in history to have done these things that they did, they couldn't have done that if humans couldn't tolerate meat, right? Like, meat obviously is not poisonous to humans. We can eat it. It's not going to kill us, right? Like, we can extract nutrients from it. Our bodies can break it down. And I think that it has served a real purpose in critical times of human history, doing whatever it is humans were trying to do at the time. And again, using the example of 1883, I had that epiphany of being like, huh, yeah, like, without being able to eat meat, people surely would have died of starvation. Like, there was nothing around to eat. So, again, for humans to be where we are today, for civilization to be where we are, where it is today, I think, yeah, meat eating has played a role in that for sure. And so this leads me to my next point that I just touched on, is that humans can eat meat, but we are not carnivores. So I do stand by that. Human beings, we're not carnivores. So the whole carnivore diet thing, I think, is kind of dangerous, although people could look at me and say, like, oh, well, eating mostly fruit is kind of dangerous. Granted, if you go back far enough, humans being frugivores, I think that's less dangerous. There's no point in human history where humans were carnivores, although I know people will love to argue that point. But for the sake of what I know and my podcast, humans, we're not carnivores. And I'm going to further prove that in a minute. So obviously, yes, meat won't kill us. We can be eating it. It's okay. But we should not be eating a diet dominant in meat, in my opinion, because we just aren't carnivores. So, you know, needing to eat meat at every meal, I think that that is excessive. I don't think that that's healthy. Again, people can disagree with me, but I do not believe it is. And so some obvious differences between humans and carnivores that just let you know that humans are not carnivores. Again, maybe as humans we can eat some meat, but we're not carnivores. So first, the way we walk. Humans walk erect on 2 feet, and all carnivores perform their motion on all fours. Also, our tongues. True carnivores have rough tongues, and all other creatures have smooth tongues. Claws. So humans, we lack claws to, like, rip through flesh. Like, if you think of, you know, like, lions and things, like, true carnivores, they have claws so that they can rip through the flesh of their prey. Whereas humans, we have, like, weaker, flat fingernails. We can't really rip through things with our fingernails. Humans also have opposable thumbs. So our thumbs make us well equipped to collect fruit in just a matter of seconds, right? All we have to do is pick it. We can pick an orange from the tree. Super easy. We can pick berries off a bush. Super simple. The claws of carnivores allow them to catch their prey in seconds. So their claws allow them to eat in seconds. Our opposable thumbs allow us to eat in seconds. And we certainly could not catch prey and rip the flesh off of, say, like, a deer in the same way that a lion could not pick a mango or a banana from a tree. Wouldn't happen. Also, our colon formation is different. So human colons are convoluted, whereas carnivore colons are smooth. Our intestinal length, this is a big one. The human intestinal tract is 30 feet long, which allows for the slow absorption of sugars and other waterborne nutrients found in fruits. And then carnivore intestinal tract is 3 to 7 feet long. And then this is necessary to avoid any rotting or decomposition of the flesh inside them. And so their intestinal tract is very, very short so that there's no rotting happening. Ours is very, very long and windy. This is why it's much easier to get food poisoning from meat as humans, because our intestinal tract is so long and there's all these crevices, and you could have bacteria stuck in those crevices and thriving and causing problems, whether it be SIBO or some other issue. SIBO stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, if you didn't know. And so for me, like, and I'm going to touch on some more differences, but for me, the intestinal tract length was always really a big one. This is why, you know, your dog can eat raw meat and you cannot, because your intestinal tract is way too long. You are going to get sick. You will probably get, you know, food poisoning of some kind, because we cannot break down raw meat. And even then, even with cooked meat, we're more susceptible to, you know, having things rot in our intestinal tract. Again, it's so long, and it's designed mostly for the breaking down of the sugars and the nutrients of in the water found in fruits. The next difference is jaw movement. So humans, as humans, we grind our teeth or grind our teeth. We grind our food, and carnivores, they have no lateral movement in their jaws. They can only go up and down. Humans, we can go side to side. We can go up and down. And that's because we grind our food. I keep saying want to grind our teeth. I don't know why. So that's our jaw movement is different. The next is our teeth difference. Maybe that's why I was wanting to say teeth. So our canine teeth have absolutely no resemblance to true canine fangs found in carnivores. So the true canine teeth found in carnivores is pointed and sharp. Our teeth are primarily flat for mashing our food. And our teeth are most similar to that of apes, who are also frugivores. So if you compare a bunch of different teeth, And the teeth comparison is used very commonly, I know. But like, even if you look at like omnivore, like animals who are omnivores, our teeth don't even quite match an omnivore animal's teeth. We definitely match, you know, like apes who are frugivores, which I think is very cool. I think it's fascinating. Some people don't love that argument. The next difference is stomach acid pH. So the pH levels of hydrochloric acid, and hydrochloric acid is the acid in our stomach that breaks down our food. So the pH level of hydrochloric acid that humans produce in the stomach ranges from 3 to 4 or higher. It can go as low as 2, but you know, it's 3 to 4. So 0 would be most acidic, 7 is neutral, 14 is the most alkaline. And then a carnivore stomach pH can be in like the 1 range, and it usually runs in the 2s. And then the stomach acid of a carnivore is at least 10 times stronger than that of a human. It could be even 100 or 1,000 times stronger than the humans even. But it's usually at least 10 times stronger, but it can be a lot stronger. And if you think about it, yeah, if you're eating like flesh all the time and maybe some bones, like you're going to need a pretty acidic stomach pH to break that all down. And so ours is pretty low in comparison. So like I said, ours ranges from a 3 to a 4, and 7 is considered like neutral. So we're just below neutral. Our digestive enzymes are also different. So humans' digestive enzymes are geared more for easy fruit digestion, which again just kind of goes to show more how humans are geared toward eating a lot of fruit. So we produce an enzyme called ptyalin to initiate the digestion of fruit. So carnivores, they have a completely different digestive enzyme ratio, and they actually have no ptyalin at all in their stomach. So it's very different. And then the last difference is, there's also more differences than these. I just kind of picked some that I thought were the most fascinating. But the next difference is the liver size. So carnivores have proportionately larger livers in comparison to their body size than humans, which makes them better at digesting fats. And humans, we really can't tolerate super high fat diets as much as maybe people think otherwise. I know there's the keto diet and stuff, which I've tried before, and that was like the death of me. No. I think just looking at the liver size compared from us to carnivores, it just even goes to show humans can't tolerate high fat diets. And again, all meat contains fat. So the more meat you're eating, the more fat you're eating. So I thought that was worth pointing out, was the liver size difference. And like I said, there's a lot more differences between carnivores and humans. And I could have gone through every single one, but it would have been really long and I didn't think it was worth that. But I just, again, like I said, I wanted to do some of the ones that I thought were more fascinating and interesting. And so another thing that I was talking about with a client when it comes to kind of like my stance on like meat eating and not eating meat is we had a really great session one day and we were kind of talking about this and like our stances on like why we don't like why we're not anti-meat consumption. No, we don't eat meat, but again, like I said, not anti-meat consumption. And I'll preface this by saying what I see all the time with my clients, and again, the most of my clients are women, is the number of women who come to me and they tell me that they don't want to eat meat anymore, that they only eat it because they feel they have to be healthy. I was there as well. And, you know, I got to this point where I was eating meat for dinner. I wasn't eating it for every meal, but I was eating it for dinner every day because I felt I had to. I felt I had to eat it to be healthy. I felt I needed it for the protein. I was working out a lot and I hated cooking it. I just hated it. I made it as easy on myself as I could. You know, I was buying grass-fed ground bison and I was just cooking it in a skillet. And, you know, one thing that I hear a lot too from people is they're like, oh, well, when you were eating meat, you probably weren't eating very high quality meat. And that's probably why it didn't agree with you. And I'm like, no, actually, I was eating pretty high quality meat. Like I didn't like to cook chicken. And the only thing I would cook would be beef or steak or beef or bison. And again, most of the time it was grass-fed bison because it tended to be low. It was a leaner meat. So that's why I picked it. But I did not like consuming it. I didn't like it. I much preferred all the veggies that I was making with it. And why is it that you hear this more from women than men? Like, you don't often hear men saying, oh, well, you know, I just eat meat because I feel like I have to, but I don't enjoy it. Like, I rarely hear that from men. More often than not from men, I hear, well, if I don't have meat in my diet, I'm not going to feel full, or I don't feel full, or I just, you know, I don't feel like myself. Like, I feel like I need it. I've heard people say that I just feel weak if I don't have meat in my diet. And I don't know how much of that is maybe like a placebo effect, you know, or just like a mental thing, right? Like just this, you know, oh, I'm not eating it, so I should, like, I'm gonna feel this way versus if like maybe you didn't know that you weren't eating meat, if you would feel the same. I don't know. But regardless, you do hear this more from women than you hear it from men. And so, like I said, a client and I had a great discussion on our theory of why this is the case. So if you look back on like hunter-gatherer societies, men were the ones going out and hunting and women were the ones gathering. And so my client had a really profound take, and she said that, you know, men are life takers and women are life givers. So men go out and hunt and they take the lives of the animals and they bring it back for food. Whereas women, they're just gathering, you know, gathering fruit or whatever is around, and they're the life givers. They are the ones birthing the children. They are taking care of children. They are taking care of the life of the future generation. And I think that that's very interesting, that as women, being life givers, being the ones that possess the power to bear life, that it's not all that shocking to me that women would have more of an issue eating the dead flesh of something, that maybe subconsciously does not sit well with most women. Right? Like, to me, I'm like, that just makes total and complete sense. Whereas men, being the ones who were the hunters, they, and again, they don't give life the same way that women do, that they don't have an issue eating animals, that it does not bother them. And so I sat with that and I thought it was such a good point, because it was. I kept thinking, like, why is it that women just don't want to eat meat? Is it just this, you know, this biological difference, and that, you know, we just don't need it, or we don't enjoy it in the same way? I really couldn't put my finger on it. And when my client shared that with me, I was like, yes, that makes sense to me. Again, it's not like scientific fact or anything, but to me, it just makes logical sense. It just feels like common sense, right? It seems like, yeah, that makes total sense. It makes perfect sense. And I was watching an interview with a woman, and I don't know if she was like a doctor or what, but she was someone who didn't eat meat. I forget her title, and I should have saved it, but sometimes I'm watching so many interviews, I don't know what's going to stick in my head after the fact. And this stuck in my head, and this isn't to like gross people out or try to convince you not to eat meat, but it was something that really spoke to me. And again, maybe it spoke to me as being a woman and being someone who gives life. I don't know. But she said that her thought of is when she's eating meat or when she would eat meat, she's like, basically, you're asking your digestive system to break down what it's like, what it's made out of, right? You're eating muscle tissue of an animal, and now you're putting that into your body, which is what your body's also made from, and now you're asking your body to break that down. And she's like, to me, that just makes no sense and seems weird. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a good point. Like, that kind of grosses me out. I don't want to eat what my own body's kind of made out, like made from, in a way. And I do. I just think women think about this a little bit more in a different way than men do. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just think it's, you know, kind of speaks to some of this like deep biology of men and women being different. And, you know, we live in this time where, you know, people always want to say men and women are the same, like we're equal, we're the same. And we're not the same. Like, we could be equals, but we're going to be equals in completely and totally different ways, because men and women are just different. We just are. Our brains are different. You know, our biology in a way is different. The way we see the world is different, and that's okay. And so I am not surprised that we would have different nutritional needs. And in fact, we do have different nutritional needs. Just look at like sleep. Men need less sleep than women do. And women cannot be productive in the same way a man can be productive. And is that a bad thing, or is it wrong to say that? No. Again, we are different. Men have 24-hour hormone cycles versus women have 28-day hormone cycles. So we're just different. So I'm not all that surprised that women can be happy, healthy, and thriving without meat in their diet. And more often than not, men don't feel the best when they don't have meat in their diet. Again, that's not to say that there's not exceptions to the rule, exceptions to that rule. You know, there's always exceptions to everything. I have lots of male friends who don't eat meat and are thriving and super strong and fit and amazing. So, you know, of course, it's possible. I'm just saying, like, generally speaking, this is what I see more often than not. And it's funny, I have been asked a few times, like, you know, do you only date people who are vegan or who eat like you? And I don't. And in fact, I've never dated anyone who was vegan. And that wasn't, you know, I didn't intend for it to be that way. It's just when I look back at my dating history, I'm like, huh, yeah, I've never dated anyone who was vegan. Not by choice. It's just what happened. And, you know, if I dated someone who ate like me, that would be fine. I would be fine with that. But I also don't care if someone eats like me. And for some people, that's a big deal. Like, if you're vegan, you want to date someone who's vegan. Or if you're, you know, if you're plant-based or whatever, you want to date someone who you know, eats the same. But I don't care. And in fact, there is this part of me that... like, I feel like, I really hesitate to say this because, again, like I said, I have lots of male friends who don't eat meat and are amazing and in shape and everything. But for me personally, there is this masculine thing about men who eat meat that I am attracted to. Again, that's just me, and that's just my biological makeup for whatever reason. And it's not that I'm not attracted to men who don't eat meat. I just have found myself more in situations where I am dating someone or with someone who eats meat, and I am okay with that. So I think that's why I don't have this aversion to being with someone who eats meat, whereas I know people who would not date someone who eats meat. There is an aversion there, and they wouldn't do it. But for me, I don't have this aversion. And it could be because, like, I'm a woman and there is something more associated than with men eating meat versus, like, if someone wanted a girl who didn't eat meat. Like I said, again, going back to the life giver, life taker situation, I think that, you know, if a man wanted a woman who didn't eat meat, I can kind of see why, given the fact, like I said, women are life givers and there's something there. But I mean, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who you end up with. It's like whoever you want to be with. But I have seen people be attacked for having a partner who's not vegan. And it's like, why are you with someone who's not vegan? Like, it's so insane to me. And I'm like, sure. Like, if you're eating the exact same as your partner, as the person you're with, you know, in a lot of ways, that's probably the easiest. Like, but it's also fine if you don't. Many of my clients eat different than their spouses. Like, I don't know. I don't see an issue with it, but I thought I would include that in this episode because I get asked that question all the time. Do you only date vegan guys and so, yeah, I wanted to share that, you know, little tidbit about the meat eating and the masculinity, again, in my opinion. That's just me. And it's something to think about. Like, I'd be curious if other women who don't eat meat feel the same way. Like, if you're a woman and you don't eat meat, what is your stance on dating somebody who is a meat eater? Are you okay with it? Do you find it attractive in a very, because it's very masculine or something? Or is it like, no, I do. I want someone who eats meat. I would love to hear your input on that. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the ethical aspect, because a lot of times people choose not to eat meat for ethical reasons, because of the treatment of animals. And I don't have, and like I totally understand that. And I totally respect that. Like, I get it. I love animals and I hate seeing some of the stuff that goes around about that. Like, I just, when I see that, I can't stomach it at all. Like, so I get it. I totally, totally get it. And my view is that, you know, there are more conscientious ways to eat meat if you really want to keep it in your diet, you know, looking more toward regenerative farms, small scale farming. You know, I think that those are much better options, something where the animal is living a nice life, a not super stressful life kind of thing. Like, there was this Amish farmer, Amos Miller, and he had like a website, and I don't know if he was going to get shut down by the USDA because he was processing all the meat himself. He was killing his animals himself and processing it versus sending it to like a big processing plant where the animals would then be slaughtered and processed. And I think that that's awful. I think that's a breeding ground for bacteria and diseases. I think you should let farmers do it themselves. You know, not that something couldn't happen there, but to me, I think that there's a much lower chance of that. And in fact, this exact farmer never had an issue of someone getting food poisoning from his meat. And that, you know, that was the reason why, you know, he was going to be shut down. Again, I don't know if he ultimately ended up getting shut down or not. I haven't followed up on the story, but people would buy from him knowing they were running that risk, in the same way people will buy raw milk knowing they're running that risk. But raw milk is, you know, has a lot of benefits, much more than pasteurized milk. So yeah, I think if you want to keep meat in your diet, there's better ways of going about it. There's, you know, great resources of buying from smaller farms and stuff. And, you know, I ultimately, though, do believe that there is something to the way a person who eats all plants vibrates. Like, I do. That's why I eat the way I eat. And that's why I talk about what I talk about, because I do believe that people who eat a lot of fruit and, you know, a lot of plants in general, but specifically a lot of fruits, I think that you vibrate very differently. Your energy is very different than a lot of people. Again, that's not, doesn't mean I'm knocking anyone else. I'm just saying, I do really believe that. And so while I have no issue with people who choose to eat meat, at the end of the day, I do strongly believe there is something to be said about a diet consisting of all living foods and how that changes you spiritually and physically. I mean, you cannot deny the fact that the more living foods you eat, the more alive you feel. And I don't eat meat anymore, but I do eat, you know, I do eat cooked food. And even just comparing how I feel when I have gone a week without eating cooked food compared to a week when I'm eating more cooked food, like, it is, even just on that scale, it is a night and day difference on how I'm feeling spiritually and physically and how much more light and alive I feel. You know, a little example is, when I eat dinner, some nights I'll do like potatoes, or some nights I'll do like rice with carrots, and I'll do like a ton of cilantro. Some nights I'll do like guacamole right now, like homemade, and I'll put like mango on top, and then, you know, use lettuce to dip in there, and like apple chips and other veggies. So if I eat like a meal of rice, when I finish that meal, and normally after I eat dinner, I take my dogs for a long walk. When I finish a meal of the rice, after I finish eating, I like want to sit down for a minute. I like want to lay on the couch for a few minutes before I go for a walk with my dogs. But if I eat the guacamole for dinner with all the fresh veggies and stuff, when I finish that meal, I'm like, all right, I am ready to go for a walk. Let's go. I'm ready. Like, let's do it. Let's go. But yeah, with the cooked food, I'm like, I have to lay down for a second. Like, my stomach needs a second. And so just looking at that alone further tells me that there is something about eating living foods. And that is, you know, meat eating aside, whether you do eat meat, whether you don't, whether you eat cooked food or you don't, I think a great rule of thumb, no matter what your diet looks like, is to just eat as many living foods as you possibly can. Your cells will feel it, and ultimately you will feel it. And like I said, it will change you spiritually and physically. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fruity Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, it would be an honor to have you leave a review. It helps bring more eyes and ears to the podcast, which can continue to spark the conversation about food and our health. I hope you have a fruitful rest of your day.